A little bird can teach a lot about what it means to be human. Coming up on today's Travel with Rick Steves, Noah Stricker tells us how his interest in ornithology has taken him all over the world to discover surprising intelligence among bird species. And a Canadian journalist based in Tokyo checks in with us on what he's noticed about Japanese society in the 5 years he's lived there reporting on economic news. Let's start in one of the wildest and most remote places in America. It's at the bottom of the list in terms of visitor numbers among the properties managed by the National Park Service. It's lucky to get a dozen visitors each year. No rangers, no trails, and no waiting in line. All the more reason Chris Solomon went out of his way to hike across the Aniakchak Wilderness on the wet and rugged Alaska Peninsula last summer. He's with us right now to tell us about a place that looks like it has nothing to offer, but can be a life-changing experience. Chris, welcome.
Oh, great to be here.
So now, is this actually a national park, or what's the technicality there?
Yeah, so technically, Rick, Aniakchak National Monument and Preserve is its name, and it is not a national park, but it is the least visited unit of the 401 properties in the national park system.
So nobody goes there. Why do they even bother thinking of it as part of the system?
Yeah, no, you think that the least visited might be something like the Martin Van Buren National Birthplace. But
right.
It's Aniakchak. And in 2012, Aniakchak had 19 visitors. Last year, it might have ticked up to 100 or so.
And you were there with how many people in your party?
Three of us.
Three of us. Now, where is it and how do you get there?
Okay, so visualize this for me. If you look at the map of Alaska, Alaska has this big tail that kind of, this frozen 1,400-mile tail that wags right. westward at Kamchatka, yeah. and that's the Aleutian Islands. And the base of that tail is the Alaska Peninsula. And that's okay. where Aniakchak is.
Now, if I wanted to go there next week, where would I fly? Would I just rent a car and drive there, or how would I get there?
So one of the reasons, Rick, that this is not very popular is it's hard to get to. From Seattle, where I live, it took us three flights to Anchorage, to King Salmon, to Port Hayden, which is just an airstrip built for World War II in the middle of nowhere on the Bering Sea. And then we backpacked with 65-pound packs for 22 miles to reach the centerpiece of the National Monument, which is a gorgeous volcanic crater. So ease of access is not one of its selling points.
Is it worth the trouble?
Yeah. I know. I was thinking about this on the drive over here and how to summarize it. I've had the good fortune to travel all over the world as a travel writer. I was with a photographer who shoots pictures all over the world in beautiful places. We agreed we'd never seen a place as unique as this.
Okay, how can you write in your article, it's just gorgeous about this, that it was mind-bendingly gorgeous. Is it the desolation that's part of it, or what makes it better than just going to any national park?
So maybe to convey what it's like, I need to tell you just a little bit about its geologic and human history, which is more interesting than it sounds. Mm-hmm. About the time the Egyptians were ruling the world, a 7,000-foot volcano blew its top with a force of 10,000 nuclear bombs. Mm-hmm. It was one of the bigger eruptions we know of. And then the volcano collapsed on itself and created a crater that could swallow Manhattan.
Yeah.
That crater filled with water, so it looked like Crater Lake National Park. Then that lake blew out in this biblical flood. And over the next couple thousand years, this lost world was sort of created inside that crater. And it just went kind of unnoticed, except for the native peoples, for thousands of years, until 1930, when this man called the Glacier Priest arrived. And the Glacier Priest was Father Bernard Hubbard, and he was one of these Jesuit priests who was cut from the old cloth of these swashbuckling sort of Jesuits. And he barnstormed all over the 49th state, having these wild adventures by bushplane and by dog sled. His write-ups went in the Saturday Evening Post and the National Geographic. And in 1930, he wrote about visiting Aniakchak, and he described it as paradise found, this lost world where orchids bloomed in the volcanically warmed soil, and the rabbits were gigantic, and they came up and walked right up to his crew, which was a bunch of the Santa Clara football players, and they felt bad killing them to eat them, but they did anyway.
So did you read his writing in preparation for your trip?
So I did. I read about his writings about the great moon crater of the earth, as he called it. And then what happened is he wanted to go back the next year, 1931, and Aniakchak blew up again, and he goes back. and talks about it no longer in these Milton-esque kind of paradise found terms, but in this Dante-esque hellish terms, and
right.
describes himself peering into this blackened inferno. And then they go into the crater a couple months after it's blown up again, and they nearly die of poisonous gases, and they're put their beans on a fumarole, and their beans boil, and they shove a thermometer in the ground, and the thermometer explodes, and it's just this hellish, wild landscape. That's the setting. Now we go back 80 years later, just kind of see what it's like. And a lot of the soot has washed off from that 1931 explosion, but it has this kind of sear, flinty beauty. It's like this desolation sublime. Once you get into the crater, it's 6 miles in diameter. It's Land of the Lost meets nuclear holocaust.
So Eniakchak is essentially this vast glacier and the environment around it.
Well, so
right?
The monument itself is inside a preserve. And the monument centerpiece is this massive crater. And inside it are all these volcanic pimples and freakish kind of geologic
things.
Yeah,
freakish. I was thinking like otherworldly. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're joined by Chris Solomon. And Chris he's a travel writer, writes for the New York Times and Scientific American. And he wrote an article for Outside Magazine on his adventure in America's least visited national park property, Eniakchak. Now, when you go up there, you mentioned there was more wildlife, more bears than there are people. What evidence of humans did you see up there?
You go to any other property, national park, you see broad-brimmed park rangers, you see Winnebagos, you see hiking trails. There's nothing up there. Hmm. We saw one boot print, and I saw a little cannery cabin at the Pacific. And
are there actually trails?
No trails, no markings. Much of it is tundra, though, so you can just kind of walk where you will.
Okay. Do you have maps, and do you have a place to sleep? Tell us just about
the
nitty-gritty logistics. Where did you sleep? How did you get water?
So we backpacked in from Port Hyden, and it was in a dense ground fog, and we used GPS, and we had maps to get in. Other people, when they go in on these trips, they'll fly by float plane and land right in the crater on Surprise Lake, which is this gorgeous little lake that's a remnant lake of that big prehistoric lake that was in the caldera. And then inside, there's nothing more than knee-high in the caldera. So you could camp anywhere you wanted. We camped right down by Surprise Lake, which is this bright green blue that glacial lakes have from the suspended sediments.
So is it fertile, or is it sort of burned off and hellish?
It's sort of like a recovering hell. There's dwarf fireweed, little pink plants growing. Right around the lake is electric green lichen growing.
And did you just sleep out under the stars in the midst of this old volcano?
We brought very sturdy tents because winds can come in and just rip apart tents. They can come in off the Bering Sea. We, you know, thank God, had gorgeous weather once we got into the caldera for about 3 days, 4 days.
So what was it like in the middle of the night if you woke up at 2 o'clock? Silence, I bet.
Silence and more stars than you've ever seen before, the Milky Way above, and not even a breath of wind. It was just a gift of a couple days.
Just that is an experience many people go through their whole lives and never enjoy.
Yeah.
Chris Solomon is telling us about the ultimate get-away-from-it-all camping trip right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Last year, Chris and some friends hiked the length of the Eniakchak National Monument. It's an exotic and rarely visited wilderness reserve just across from Kodiak Island on the Alaska Peninsula. His article about their expedition appears in the May 2014 edition of Outside Magazine, and it includes photos they took of the amazing landscape. You can find a link to his article from this week's show details in the radio section at ricksteves.com. I love the way you write about desolation. I mean, you wrote, "I'm grumpy about the prospects of our country for many reasons these days, but one thing that still gives me some hope is the ease with which we can still vanish here. How many forgotten corners remain to escape to and explore?" If somebody wants to get away from it all, is this it? And why does that give you hope?
I do find satisfaction. I've met fascinating people in crowded, busy places, but David Foster Wallace wrote about total noise that we live in, and his concern about that. And I find so much satisfaction and calmness in just getting back to quiet places and places where you can feel small and unimportant. And I think we need that in an age when we're just so go, go, go. This is certainly one of those places where you can find that recalibration that I think is so important. I don't think you have to go to almost the ends of the earth. There are places in the lower 48 that still have you know, at least some semblance of this.
But you like to get the measure of a place for you as far as how offbeat it is how few bars you have on your cell phone.
That's become sort of a rule of thumb. It really has. I mean, the more you can unplug, the more maybe you get back in touch with some things about yourself and friends that are important. And
that's more difficult these days.
It is. There's a place that matters a great deal to me in the Northwest, and I was pretty sad when I realized I had cell coverage throughout the Mattow Valley.
Yeah. Chris, you wrote, "We spend our days trying to be big. In the middle of nowhere, though, we can surrender to smallness again and instead find where we fit in the landscape. Out there, where there's nothing, is where there's the most to learn." Talk about just the lessons you can get from this, where you say where there's nothing, there's the most to learn. And here in the United States, we have the most, but in some ways we are poverty-stricken, trying to be big. What's the value of being small?
You know, being out, for instance, for 10 days in Alaska, things like cell phones didn't work, my fancy GPS watch died. We just had to be in tune with the countryside and the things that were happening. And we noticed the autumn changing. The berries got sweeter. The fish started approaching the shore, trying to find, sniff out their home rivers. And the bears started coming down to get ready to eat them. And you felt like you were plugging into something more elemental that spoke to you as a human being.
That's it. More elemental. I mean, ultimately, our batteries are going to all be dead. And it's elemental.
All that other junk that we worry about day after day, not so important, maybe.
That's a very important lesson of travel. Chris Solomon, thanks for going there. Thanks for writing about it. And thanks for inspiring us to find a place where there are fewer bars on our cell phones.
Oh, my pleasure.
The sky above our heads can be filled with remarkable things to discover. Up next, a young birding enthusiast shares some of the surprising things he's learned from observing different bird species all over the world, and what birds can teach us about being human. And later in the hour, we'll check in with a Canadian journalist who writes for a European business magazine in Japan. He'll share his observations from Tokyo about how the slow economic recovery has been affecting life in Japan. Share your thoughts with us by email. Our address is radio@ricksteves.com.